Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, so it's a little bit of a getaway day for us. There's no show tomorrow. We're going to celebrate the 4th of July holiday tomorrow. That means no radio, podcast, or video. We are back on Monday, but it's a pre-recorded show. I've actually already put that one in the can. I would never try to pull the wool over your eyes and pretend something's, you know, live when it's not. So we've never done this before. We're going to be pre-recorded on video. We've never done a pre-recorded edition of our show on video, but we will on Monday. I think it'll be a good one. I'll tell you more about that over the course of our time. So this is the last live show we'll do until Tuesday. So there's a little bit of a grab bag here of things I kind of want to get to. Most of it, at least fun. Maybe not all of it great news necessarily, but it's at least, you know, worth talking about, worth covering here today. Let me begin with this. Admittedly, there's just been a lot of negativity out there when it comes to like a lot of the national writers, what I think of as kind of the blue check college football brigade of folks who, you know, kind of cover this sport. And listen, you know, at a certain point in time, I get like annoyed by that, admittedly. I mean, the one thing I've always tried to be really honest about is like I'm totally biased. I want the college football season to take place. And while I think that there are valuable reasons why the college football season should take place beyond just my own employment, my own enjoyment, nonetheless, I'm not going to like, you know, sugarcoat this and say anything different than what it is. I'm looking for reasons why the season will take place as opposed to the opposite. And to the degree to which some of the national media sometimes seems to be going the other direction, you know, that kind of gets annoying for me. I won't lie to you about that. I think I've got a responsibility not to turn this into like the coronavirus truther show still, even with all of that said. So I'll be careful here. I just wanted to provide a little bit of positivity, a little bit of, hey, if you've been kind of worried about all of this, a little bit of, hey, maybe things are a little bit better than you think. Because I will say this, that for the people who know what I do for a living, the one thing I get asked more than anything else, it used to be, hey, who's the quarterback going to be, or the whatever, the blah, 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 and the blah, blah, blah. Those are used to be the very common questions I'm asked. These days, when I bump into somebody that I know, really the only question I get asked, not that I'm like the source of all knowledge, just people just don't know what else to talk about, the thing I get asked frequently is, are we going to have a season? Are you sure about that? We're going to have a season. And my answer to this question has kind of always been yes. It's been yes for months and months and months. The truth is, even like the sort of the darkest time of all of this, my answer to the question of will there be football was still yes. And maybe I'm hopelessly naive, and maybe I'm going to be proven wrong in a disastrous fashion come late summer, early fall when all of this begins. But that has always kind of been my answer is, yes, I do think there's going to be a season. And sometimes the amplified voices in media seem to be saying something different than that. So as a way of kind of making us feel a little bit better as we head towards a holiday weekend, I thought this exchange was very interesting. Kevin Negandhi on ESPN, I don't even know what show this was on. I just saw this online at ESPN.com. Kevin Negandhi asks Reese Davis, one of the great voices of college football, the host of College Game Day, a guy who, and ESPN's got a lot of good guys like this and gals too, who are genuinely fans of the sport they cover. You know, they like it. They want to be where they are. They appreciate the luxury and the privilege of being, you know, right in the center of the action. I think would say that Reese Davis is one of those guys for college football. So ESPN host asked him, Reese Davis, do you still feel like we're going to have a college football season? I thought this exchange from ESPN and Reese Davis was pretty interesting. Let me let you hear it.
What's the confidence level right now that we will actually have a college football season this fall?
In some form, Kevin, it's still really high. I think they're going to play. There certainly might be some alterations to the schedule, as you and I were talking earlier, particularly among teams outside the Power Five. Potentially their schedules could be impacted. There's still a great deal of optimism and reason to think that games will be played. How many people will be in the stands, if any? We don't know that yet. And I think there's still so much to learn over the next couple of months. What all of these positive tests at a variety of schools across the country mean? What does it mean by virtue of the fact that at least based on what's been reported up to this point, it seems that not many players, thankfully, have not gotten seriously ill. So all of those things I think will unfold over the next several weeks. And then once the practices start, does that impact testing and sickness and that type of thing? So many things could change, but I still have a great deal of optimism that there will be a season.
So listen, I take that as really good news because Rhys Davis, I think of as kind of a, you know, a guy that chooses his words carefully. He's not given to bombast or anything like that. If he's on TV saying, yes, I think we're still going to have a season, then you know what? I'm going to put my faith and my trust in Rhys Davis here for a moment because I think we're going to have a season too. Now, like I said, take all my words with a grain of salt because ultimately I'm just a biased dude that wants the season to take place, that sort of fears the alternative if the season doesn't take place. But it's nice to know that there are still voices of optimism out there, and probably a lot of them. The people working to make sure the season does take place are working quietly. The people who seemingly at times are on a different side of that, maybe a little louder, but that doesn't mean that, you know, some things can't still fall into place. More likely than not, a high level of confidence, as Rhys Davis says, that all this kind of comes together. So I thought on a day before we go into a holiday weekend, that was probably a good thing to mention. Now, let me just completely shift gears and bring up something different for a moment. I have been really fascinated over the last couple of days with how things have unfolded for UGA 2021 quarterback commit Brock Vandegrift. Now, let's go back in time just for a moment. When Vandegrift broke his Oklahoma commitment, chose UGA, it was a pretty big moment. Oklahoma is kind of one of these programs that has a very nice pedigree when it comes to quarterbacks with good reasons. You've seen what, you know, guys in the Oklahoma system have done. Vandegrift kind of envisioned him being a part of that system, but he is from the Athens area. The pull of being at UGA was pretty substantial for him. The chance to be a part of what might be kind of a regenerated new version of the Georgia offense, you hope that's enticing to him as well. So before we talk about what's been going on with Vandegrift as of late, let me go back in time to Vandegrift on the moment which he's ready to choose UGA, be a part of this program, as told to our Jeff Centel, kind of how he sees himself fitting in at UGA. Here is Brock Vandegrift.
We're kind of sacrificing the best fit for me just for some other things that are priorities now.
Do you look at Georgia a little bit differently, that they're trying to move away from their normal physical pounded identity a little bit?
Someone asked me that the other day, and would they change the offense or something? I was like, they're never going to change the offense. They have a million plays, and they only run what their players are comfortable with and what they're going to do the best with. Because, I mean, if you have the dang Darnell Washington out there, like, you're not going to have him blocking every play when he can go for six every other play. So, I think they're going to run with what they're comfortable with and what their players are going to do well with.
So I think it's really interesting from Brock Vandegrift. He chooses Georgia for reasons that are not necessarily related to the offense they're going to run. He likes the idea of being close to home. What you hope happens for Georgia over the course of the next 12 months before Vandegrift gets on campus is that through Todd Monken and the presence of Jamie Newman or perhaps JT Daniels, things like that, that Vandegrift can kind of see himself thriving in a Georgia offense the way that he once envisioned himself thriving in an Oklahoma offense. With that in mind, it certainly seems like Vandegrift performed pretty well this past week at the Elite 11 camp that's been going on there in like the Nashville Murfreesboro, Tennessee area. I thought Vandegrift had a nice tweet about this, showing off some photos of him there doing the work. Also some nice words saying thank you to the whole Elite 11 staff for a great couple days. It's much bigger than ball. It's truly a brotherhood. Much respect to all that were in attendance. Very nice stuff there from Brock Vandegrift, who was a part of the Elite 11 camp. Now, if you're on social media in any form or fashion following what goes on in college football, you already know what I'm about to tell you. This Elite 11 camp this year was incredibly controversial. Now, for those of you that don't really care, this is probably a reason why you would not care, but the way it's supposed to work is, and Trent Dilfer is like the face of the Elite 11 camp, it's supposed to be in and of itself a competition, right? You bring guys in, they're supposed to compete to see who the best quarterback is. And because of the COVID-19 and stuff like that, this year was going to have to be different. And so it was said at the outset of the event that the competition is going to be based 50% on what happens while you're here and 50% on your junior film. Well, then lo and behold, at the very end of it all, they all of a sudden, I guess, decided to change the criteria to say, actually, we decided to make it 75% of your junior film and 25% based on what happens here at the camp, which rightly so might lead some people to wonder, what's the point of traveling all the way here if all you're doing is looking at film to determine who the winner is going to be? A lot of people kind of took this as a predetermined outcome. Caleb Williams, the Oklahoma commit, ended up winning, and I use winning in air quotes. We think that Caleb is obviously a great quarterback prospect, but it sounds like that he didn't necessarily have the best week of the guys who were there this past week, and I'm just judging this on the basis of people who were there and eyewitness accounts and everything else. It sounds like Brock Vandegrift did pretty well. I guess 24/7 Sports had him ranked number 2 overall. overall in terms of the quarterbacks who were there. There's one drill. It's a speed drill that basically combines accuracy, you know, how quickly can you hit a number of targets, rollouts, things like that. Vandegrift did that way faster than almost anybody, way faster than anybody else who was there this past week. So it seems like Georgia's got themselves a pretty good one in Brock Vandegrift. I don't know that he should have won the Elite 11. It should have been the MVP of the camp. I'm not quite so sure. All I care about is, do you do well in comparison to elite signal callers? It seems like Vandegrift did. A lot of folks were mad the way it ultimately went down and Caleb Williams won. But the overall most important takeaway from this is, it sounds like Vandegrift, in comparison to the very best quarterbacks in the country for 2021, held up pretty well, and that's good news. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Meriwether and Tharp, and we're glad to have you with us no matter how you get to us today. Live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook and YouTube, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref as a podcast, wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Really glad to have you with us, and huge thanks to Meriwether and Tharp for making it possible. Your source for Georgia divorce. That means something here, because the most scary thing in the world would be to go through the divorce process alone. Let's face it, marriages sometimes come to an end. Sometimes, as the old saying goes, irreconcilable differences just becomes an issue. Your life is going to be better moving forward, you know, in a different situation. But to begin that next phase means having someone on your side that's been through it before, that can take all the experience gained from working on thousands of cases, similar, different, whatever else to yours, but working on thousands of cases, putting that expertise to work for you. That's what our friends at Meriwether and Tharp are able to do. They are huge, huge friends of ours here at Dog Nation Daily. We're very proud of our partnership. We love the stuff they're doing for the community, for folks who find themselves in a tough spot, for folks who need to, you know, restore themselves. Meriwether and Tharp certainly provides that. So you can find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com. That's theatlantadivorceteam.com. They are your source for Georgia divorce, our friends at Meriwether and Tharp. All right, I want to talk about something for a moment. We're going to bring in our buddy Barrett Salee from CBSSports.com, who's a terrific voice talking about college football. Over the course of the offseason, he's had some interesting things to say about Georgia, the quarterback competition at UGA, and the battle going on between Georgia and Florida in the SEC East. As a precursor to that, let me give you a little bit from ESPN here for a moment, because they recently looked at all of the top most important games for each of their top 25 teams. Georgia's obviously one of them. Connor Riley wrote about this at DogNation.com, too. I'll put a link to that story when I post the show later on at the worldfamousDogNation.com. But for now, for Georgia, the most important game is not the early season game that most fans have circled. That would be the trip to Alabama in September. According to ESPN, the most important game is still, for now, Florida. Alex Scarborough is the writer. Let me read to you what Scarborough wrote about this. He says, the Gators have been building since Coach Dan Mullen's arrival, and the emergence of quarterback Kyle Trask gives them a real chance of contending in the East. If Georgia doesn't want to let the division flip this season and possibly in the long term, then extending the win streak to four games is a must. That's Alex Scarborough from ESPN there on that front, which I think is really pretty interesting. Let me say this way. I think that one of the things you see very commonly in college football is the idea of, you know, you've seen this said before of, we want Bama, right? You kind of see this all the time. People say, you know, we want Bama. It's almost kind of become a joke to kind of hold that sign up around, you know, various, you know, levels of sports. I think that there is something to be said for, you almost have to earn the right for that. You almost have to earn the right to want Bama. And what ESPN may be saying about Georgia right now is, for now, you've still got to deal with Florida before you worry about Alabama. And to that extent, you know, I don't necessarily know if that's so incorrect. I mean, you know, let's face it. There is still some thought that Florida is going to be a contender for Georgia. Barrett Salee may come on here in a minute, and he may, you know, talk about the idea of Florida actually beating Georgia, actually overtaking them for the SEC East. However, the one thing I will disagree with on Alex Scarborough's point, though, is says that if Georgia doesn't want to let the division flip this season, possibly in the long term, then extending the win streak to four games is a must. I almost see it as the exact opposite of that. I almost see this as a situation where, if Georgia can beat Florida again, for all the reasons we've talked about, the hyper Kyle Trask, the hyper Dan Mullen, all those things, if this year that stuff doesn't prove to be true, If Florida doesn't have the clearly better quarterback, if Dan Mullen doesn't have the demonstrably better offense, then I never want to hear that stuff again. So one of the things that makes Georgia-Florida important this year is the idea that moving forward, you can completely silence that for the future. Because how can you argue the idea of Dan Mullen being the tutor of quarterbacks if the guy that he has that has experience doesn't fully come through and doesn't do all those things this year? And if the Florida offense isn't obviously better, given the fact that that's supposed to be the area in which Dan Mullen has the expertise, then how do you make that case going forward? The thing that I might agree with ESPN on, the thing that might make Georgia-Florida pretty important, is the idea that it can end once and for all the narrative that has emerged this offseason of the Gators being dangerous because of Mullen's expertise and because what they're able to do at the quarterback position. That's the kind of narrative that Georgia can silence if it can beat Florida again this season. So interesting stuff there from ESPN. I'll put a link to that when we post the show later on at dognation.com. Let's keep this conversation going, more on how the SEC East is going to play out and what Georgia might look like at the quarterback spot. He's a good friend of ours and a great voice covering college football. It's Barrett Salee from CBS Sports here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp. And Barrett, who's been high on Georgia before, by the way, for a number of years, I believe it's safe to say has picked Florida to win the SEC East for this upcoming season. Barrett, is that a fair characterization of your preseason pick in the SEC East right now? You are Florida over Georgia, is that right?
What's up, BA? Yeah, for now I am, obviously extremely subject to change, as are all of these predictions, for a lot of different reasons at this point of the summer. But I think really when we wrote our schedule predictions, I think it was in late April, I thought, and I still do think, that the division is going to come down to the cocktail party, which is not a tough take at all. But to me, I think it's going to depend on that game, because Georgia has to have it to force a tie. Florida has to have it to have a win outright in the division. And really, it all boils down to cross-division games. You know, Alabama for Georgia, and that obviously is a huge deal. And so, I'm picking Florida right now. I think with so much uncertainty in the division, having who I think is the best returning quarterback as of this very moment in Kyle Trask, and the upside that he possesses is a huge factor, especially considering, the fact that we haven't had really any offseason, and for some teams you had a few practices, but that's it. So, yeah, as of now, I'm picking Florida. Obviously, extremely subject to change.
So I want to talk about a lot of this, and these are all good faith questions. I'm genuinely curious about your answer on this. Beyond Trask, if we stipulate that he's going to be a good quarterback for Florida this season, I'm interested in some of the other reasons here because, Barrett, one of the things that comes up a lot, and I'm sure you're not surprised to find out that a lot of my audience doesn't agree with this, but the idea that Dan Mullen is this diabolical coach who's going to sort of dial up wins and success against a guy like Kirby Smart, who some people might say is more of a recruiter than an in-game coach. I guess the question that we would ask around here about that is, if that were true, then why wouldn't there be more evidence of that in the past? Because not only has Kirby beaten Florida under Mullen the last couple of years, 19 points, by the way, in 2018. In 2017, when Georgia was only a field goal favorite against Mississippi State, won the game 31-3. Or 37-3. There's this notion out there that Mullen's eventually going to outcoach Kirby, but with similar talent levels the last couple of years, at least seemingly, that hasn't really happened.
Well, I would disagree with you about similar talent levels, because Kirby has recruited his tail off for 4 years. Mullen took over a Florida team a lot like what Kirby took over when he first got to Georgia, a diminished roster, and I think more importantly, a roster that was completely neglected in the strength and conditioning area, to a point where, under Jim McElwain, multiple Florida Gators were seeking outside strength and conditioning help because they just weren't getting it within the athletic department. So I would vehemently disagree with you from that perspective.
I think you're right. Let me cut you off because I think you're right. Let me say it a different way. What Vegas viewed as a fairly even game going into it. Georgia hasn't been a big favorite in any of these games.
But Vegas also makes lines and makes win totals a lot, especially this time of year, based on market perception, not reality.
Sure.
That's why Michigan's always favored. That's why Notre Dame is always high up there. That's why Texas is always up there. So I think anybody that uses Vegas as a metric right now is completely fooling themselves and using something that really has very little to do with reality. And I would argue that, you know, the development of talent and the coaching ability of Dan Mullen has not matched what people expected, because you take what happened at Mississippi State and you have to put it in perspective. What he did in 2014, helping Dak Prescott become the highest Heisman Trophy finisher in program history, was on him. Dak Prescott was extremely average in 2013 and really, you know, had to fight to keep to get starting snaps ahead of Tyler Russell, and didn't even do that before the season. And, you know, a year later, with a full offseason as the starting quarterback, you know, Dak Prescott leads Mississippi State to number one in the nation and finishes eighth in the Heisman Trophy discussion. Consistently made that program a bowl team, whereas they have 13 total bowl appearances. Dan Mullen has nine of them, eight or nine of them. I can't remember the exact number. So to say that he has not proven to be a coach that can lead a program to you know, heights unseen before, he did exactly that at Mississippi State in the toughest division in college football, with a extremely huge talent gap between the rest of that division. So at Florida, from where he was, from there, where that program was, from being completely neglected by Jim McElwain before he got there, to going to back-to-back New Year's Six bowl games in his only two seasons there, I would say is way more impressive of a coaching job than Kirby did in 2016, his first season at Georgia.
You wrote at one point in time that if JT Daniels was granted immediate eligibility, you might reconsider your pick for Georgia in the SEC East. You might make them your division favorite. What is it about JT Daniels that makes you high on him?
JT Daniels is an incredible quarterback. What he did as a true freshman when he was supposed to be a senior in high school for a USC team that didn't have any offensive line and a very young wide receiving core was incredibly impressive. I know the results from a wins and losses perspective wasn't, but if people tell you that he wasn't, you know, effective and wasn't impressive, they just didn't watch any USC games that year. I mean, that's as simple as that. And I think when you look at what Jamie Newman is, 12 touchdowns and 8 picks against FBS winning teams last year. FBS winning teams in the ACC, with, I think, one of the best wide receivers in the country at Wake Forest and an incredible head coach in Dave Clawson. That does not exactly inspire confidence in me. And I know when folks look at Jamie Newman, they'll look at all the highlights. Go look at how he reads defenses. He doesn't necessarily do that all that well. When you put him in Georgia's offense with pretty much a new offensive line, albeit a talented offensive line, but pretty much a new offensive line, and a wide receiving core that, outside of George Pickens, and I'm not even sure how reliable George Pickens is, outside of George Pickens, it's basically the same thing as last year in terms of reliability, even though the faces have changed. In a new offense with Todd Monken, who has not had any chance to coach that team yet, I just don't know why people expect this offense to suddenly become this juggernaut with Jamie Newman, a guy who was good but not great at Wake. When you look at JT Daniels, he was good and at times great at USC, and I think a far better fit for this offense based on what I expect not only Todd Monken to do, but what I expect Todd Monken to do with, you know, a shortened off season, knowing that Kirby Smart probably is not going to unleash as much as he probably anticipated unleashing before COVID-19.
So I believe that if both quarterbacks are eligible, Jamie Newman is going to win the starting job. And I won't go so far as to kind of tout him as highly as he has been touted by others. For instance, we had your colleague Chip Patterson on the show a couple of weeks ago, who kind of, you know, certainly had some strong things to say in favor of Jamie Newman. You know, you cite, you know, some of the things that Greg McElroy has recently said, others have said, in sort of defense of Jamie Newman, or sort of touting a big year for Jamie Newman. I guess the assumption I'm going to make on this, Barrett, is all of those people cannot be wrong. And frankly, some of the hype related to Newman actually predates his arrival at Georgia. Sure. This is not just the typical Georgia quarterback hype, in other words. So the assumption that we're making here is that a lot of these people who seem to see things they like in Newman, they can't all be wrong.
No, they can't all be wrong. You know, I might be wrong. You might be wrong. They might all be wrong, though. You know, I think when it comes to high-profile programs like Georgia, we have seen people be extremely wrong about quarterbacks. And the one that jumps out to me more than anybody else, and those in the SEC thought more wisely of this, is Shea Patterson at Michigan.
Sure.
Shea Patterson's not a good quarterback. Shea Patterson showed flashes. Jamie Newman showed flashes. And I'm not comparing the two by any stretch of the imagination in terms of what their actual ability is. But to say that, you know, everybody can't be wrong, I disagree. Look at Shea Patterson. The vast majority of people in this country thought he was going to be a star at Michigan. Those of us that saw him in the SEC, maybe not, but some of us might have. I didn't, but a lot of people did. Everett Golson at Florida State, I think, is another perfect example. If you remember, the sure. big hype about him was, you know, could he even be eligible? You know, at Florida State, because he was supposed to be a star. He was just okay, and he had a pretty good year at Notre Dame. In fact, a pretty good career at Notre Dame led him to a national championship game. So I disagree. I think that. You know, everybody being wrong about quarterbacks, there's probably one or two every year that, you know, can fit into that category. Maybe Jamie Newman's not it. Maybe he's not. But to say that that's not possible, I think, is just wrong.
I'm trying to squeeze in two quick things before we let you go. If you look at Alabama, they have lost their most recent game to Clemson, lost most recent game to Auburn, lost most recent game to LSU, yet still sit along the perch as, you know, favorite in the SEC by gambling odds, by the, you know, basis of most prognosticators. How much of that Alabama mystique and prestige is still there, and how much of that is at risk this year of kind of slipping away if Alabama, you know, does what it did a year ago, which is not make the college football playoff?
Yeah, I think there's a couple to answer both of those. I think it's sort of, you sort of have to address them from different angles. I think when you look at the SEC this year, you know, are there any teams that are great but really great to a point where they're going to be national championship contenders? I don't see one right now. I think Alabama can get there. I think other teams can get there too. But when you see Alabama compared to the rest of the SEC, really good offensive line, really good running back in Najee Harris, two stud receivers in Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith, one of whom should be playing on Sundays this year, and a quarterback in Mac Jones that was really solid last year in a pinch, and another one in Bryce Young, who has, you know, obviously a ton of talent. So, and then on top of that, you get Dylan Moses back. You get a more experienced offensive or defensive line that I think was, you know, not a liability last year, but not up to Alabama standards. So I think when you put all that together, especially considering the offseason was, you know, is obviously what it is, that, you know, you have a lot to be excited about that you've already seen. And these other teams that are big boys, you know, the LSUs, the Georgias, the Auburns, you know, they have a lot to be excited about, but really we haven't seen a lot of it. There are a lot of questions that sort of remain unanswered. So I think Alabama, because of that, is going to be the pick for a lot of different people. But I think that from a national championship perspective, they probably don't have that this year. I think they might be a team that is good enough to get there but not good enough to win it, especially when you have Ohio State and you have Clemson, you know, out there. So, you know, I think, is it important that Alabama does get back to where it is? I don't necessarily think so. You know, and if they want to sustain the air quote dynasty in the minds of people, then yeah, but you can't have a dynasty if other teams rule college football. And I've been saying this for years, is that a lot of times they're in a dynasty in college football. That's just the way it is. And I think this year and last year have proven that. So, you know, to get back that mystique, yeah, they need to win the national championship. But to me, Alabama is a really good team that can make the playoff every single year. Beyond that, they have to catch a few breaks, and, you know, they haven't really caught those the last couple of years.
Very quick final question for you. We played some audio of Reese Davis before you joined us. Optimistic that the season's going to take place. That flies in the face of what some national writers have been saying as of late. Where's your level of optimism at the moment?
It'll take place. If you look at every metric that matters in terms of COVID, everything sort of trends to younger people getting it and death rates continuing to plummet, which has been the case for about a month now. And if younger people get it and move on, which is what the vast majority of people are having right now, then I just can't imagine why. If the reason is, you know, liability purposes, then okay, that is a reason that I think a lot of folks are worried about. But if it's a public health issue, I think the public health issue is improving dramatically, despite what cable news is saying. And by, you know, early August, you will see you know, this basically filter through the entire country. And, you know, if that means the season gets delayed, then okay, but it'll be played. There's no doubt in my mind.
Barrett Salee, CBS Sports. If folks want to find the work you're doing online, where can they get more of you?
Yeah, CBSSports.com. Download the CBS Sports app. Watch CBS Sports HQ streaming across all devices on the CBS Sports app, and follow on Twitter at Barrett Salee. And hitting up that Instagram, trying to build that up, and that's at Barrett_Salee. So check it out.
All right, Barrett, thanks for your time.
All right, BA, make it a good day.
Yes, sir.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So a quick perusal of Facebook, and folks aren't happy with Barrett Salee. So I guess here is the real quick. They are rolling in fast and furious. Jonathan Clark weighing in. A lot of folks kind of weighing in. Javier Barnes there as well. People didn't like some of Barrett Salee's takes there from CBS Sports. Here's what I will say in response to that. I think when you look at two categories of discussion here, some of the stuff that said about Jamie Newman, some of the stuff that said about Dan Mullen and Floor, I'm okay with somebody being skeptical of Newman, because ultimately what Barrett says about, you know, when we've mentioned Everett Golson's name here before, a little bit different kind of thing because he wasn't a transfer, but when you go back and look at what people were saying about Jeremy Johnson at Auburn prior to the 2015 season, there have been quarterbacks in the SEC that folks thought were going to be good that turned out not to be. That has happened before, right? We can all cite that. So if someone wants to be skeptical of Jamie Newman, I'm fine with that. Now, throughout all of this, the arrival of JT Daniels, everything else, I have been steadfast in my opinion. That's one of the things I think we do really well here. We're not roller coaster. We don't go up and down. We don't really change our mind very frequently. I have said the entire time that the idea that Jamie Newman can be a good quarterback at Georgia and good would be enough to make Georgia great. I feel very, very confident saying that. I have no idea if Jamie Newman's going to be, as you know, David Pollack has said, a first round pick, or as Greg McElroy has said, a top five pick. I have no idea if that's going to be true or not. I don't think you need Newman to be that good in order for Georgia to have a great season. You just need for him to be good. When you've got the arm strength, when you've got the legs, you know, the ability to use his legs, when you are likely a draft pick in some form or fashion, whatever round he'll determine by how he plays this year, good is good enough for Georgia. And he may go on to be great, but he doesn't have to be great for Georgia to be great. The presence of JT Daniels hasn't changed my mind on that. The presence of a little skepticism on the part of a writer, I think that's all fair game. That doesn't change my mind on that. My opinion is not moved or altered about Jamie Newman whatsoever. On the point about, you know, Dan Mullen and Florida, obviously everyone's got a right to pick whoever you want to do whatever else. The one thing that I have said about the so-called Florida hot takes is that it is seemingly starting with an outcome and working backwards to get the results. Now, listen, I have also been very clear about this. When we are as open and direct about our opinion on this as we have been, someone's going to be wrong. It'll be, what, November 2nd coming in here on Monday? If Florida, with Dan Mullen and Kyle Trask and whatever else, if all of that goes down, if Florida wins that game, then clearly I got to come in here and take my medicine, and I will, and Florida fans will, you know, give me grief about it, but that's just kind of what makes all this fun. You put yourself on one side or the other, and you let the chips fall where they may. And I have been very clear about this, that the evidence in support of Dan Mullen, the evidence in support of Kyle Trask, is not as robust as I think that it should be for the number of predictions that have been out there. It almost seems like we're starting with an outcome and working backwards to find the evidence to support that. And by the way, on Monday's show, which we've pre-recorded, we kind of get into kind of an interesting thing that's out there on the internet the last couple of days. Smaller voices, not necessarily the more famous people, but all of a sudden there's this push for, well, heck, maybe the best quarterback at Florida is actually Emory Jones. Now think about this. On one hand, we've got people that are going to tell us that Florida is going to be great because of Kyle Trask, but on the other hand, there's this growing pocket of the internet, and I cite the sources on Monday show, who are like, well, really, the best of Florida is probably Emory Jones. That's the guy who gives you the best chance to win the most important games that Florida plays. How can both those things be true? So that is ultimately the take on that. SEC through time. Let me also mention the College Football Hall of Fame. It is open right now. CFBHall.com, the website you can go to. One of the great tourist attractions in all of the city of Atlanta. It's back open. You can go see all the cool UGA stuff that's there. Really just celebrate the sport itself. Celebrate, you know, one of the crown jewels of downtown Atlanta. One of the things that makes Atlanta kind of the capital city of college football in America, I think, is the College Football Hall of Fame. CFBHall.com. You can get your tickets on that front. All right, I went long. My music's about to run out. Let me just do a couple of really quick SEC through stories. And I couldn't help but notice there's been this story out of Mississippi State that's been making the rounds, and it's amazing how you want to talk about how fake news happens. And this is almost totally by accident, I believe. I don't think this is intentionally done on anybody's part, but there's been this, like, conversation out there. Well, you know, Mississippi State has canceled tailgating for the upcoming season. Yet if you really look at what has been reported coming out of Starkville, a specific kind of tailgate has been canceled. This is really, really important. If you see on a message board, if you see on Twitter, if you see on Facebook, or wherever you go for your news, well, Mississippi State's canceled tailgating, and pretty soon everybody's going to be doing the same thing. The alumni tailgate, sort of an official tailgate, a specific kind of tailgate that not everyone participates in, only some people participate in Mississippi State, has decided not to have their tailgate this season. Now, is that done for coronavirus-related reasons? Almost obviously for sure, but tailgating on campus at Mississippi State has not been canceled. And if you're in Starkville and, you know, participating in a tailgate, unless you are a part of this specific alumni tailgate, then your tailgate has not been canceled. Now, listen, if there's reduced capacity for attendance for the upcoming season, will tailgating be altered by that? Yeah, there's a really good chance that it will. But as of now, the Mississippi State alumni tailgate being canceled isn't a harbinger of anything. It's just one specific tailgate that's been done away with. And to say that this is the first domino of many that will fall that will lead to the absence of a season this year, that ain't it. So, you know, this is an example of some kind of, you know, sort of fake news-ish type thing that kind of got pushed out there that sort of turned into a little bit of a weird hysteria over the last 24 hours and almost completely misunderstood. A tailgate has been canceled, but not tailgating across the board in general there at Mississippi State. That's probably a pretty important thing to bring up. What is not important to bring up, but I'm going to mention anyway, did you see the story of the Alabama students? It's called COVID parties. I'm going to read this from ABC News. Students in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, who've been diagnosed with COVID-19, have been attending parties in the city and surrounding area as part of a disturbing contest to see who can catch the virus first, a city council member told ABC News on Wednesday. This is probably the most embarrassing thing associated with Alabama since they hired Butch Jones as an intern, but nonetheless, this is not a good look for the Yellowhammer State. The quote here from someone is, they put money in a pot and then they try to get COVID. Whoever gets COVID first gets the pot. It makes no sense. They're intentionally doing it. I guess the one part of this I do agree with is the fact that it makes no sense. So good job, Alabama, keeping that reputation alive in a lot of different ways, and we'll make that your SEC through. Now, speaking of Alabama, as we transition here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by our friends at Meriwether and Tharp, Alabama does get some good news on the recruiting trail yesterday. Let me kind of do a little bit of a rapid fire roundup here for a moment. So Dallas Turner, as expected, committed to Alabama. I think this is a really good player. I would love for Georgia to have gotten him. Would love to see Georgia still get back involved in all of this. Turner's one of these guys that specifically cited what he sees there on his commitment graphic, those national championship trophies, that prestige of Alabama, I think is something that really mattered to him. I don't think that would, in normal circumstances, though, make that an unwinnable recruiting battle. I think the opportunity to host visitors, the opportunity to sell the Athens campus, to me, throughout this entire process, Turner has always felt like one of the guys in which Alabama just probably had the, or I should say Georgia, you know, the presence of visits would have aided George and Turner's recruitment as much as anything possibly could. But alas, the situation is what it is. Alabama's already gotten at least two commitments so far this cycle from guys that never visited there. So pretty clearly, as they build up their recruiting momentum, they are mostly doing on the basis of their name brand. And, you know, obviously, you know, Georgia doing some of the same kind of stuff in some regards, but hopeful for visits to take place in some other situations. But for now, Turner is off the board. We talked yesterday with Jeff Sintel when he came on the show about Smile Mond and the five-star linebacker. Initially supposed to be a June commitment. The month of June came and went. Mond never made his commitment announcement. He has teased something new on social media as of late, said he had to push it back a little bit, but he still got something coming real soon. Your guess is as good as mine as to what all of that means. There was also kind of a cryptic tweet recently from Xavier Sory, the linebacker we've talked about a few times, kind of hinting that something might be coming. But once again, your guess is as good as mine as to where all of that is. If you missed the show with Jeff yesterday, and if you're on the radio, we're going to give you part of that coming up as a part of our Monday broadcast. But if you missed that, I thought it was really good stuff. Kind of looking at kind of, you know, where Georgia's hitting, where Georgia may be missing right now, and just the reality of the situation. One way or another, I still think, and I'll be shocked if otherwise, that Georgia's going to put together an elite class for the upcoming recruiting cycle. I just think that's the way that's likely to work out. And yet, we're not going to pretend that it's not a little bit of a disappointment to lose out on Tony Grimes, or Dallas Turner was a player that I really liked. A little bit of a disappointment there as well. You can have two things be true at once. Disappointed with some of the guys that Georgia missed out on, and yet still fairly confident, fairly hopeful that Georgia's going to still put together a really good class before it's all said and done. We just need, and by we, I don't mean Georgia fans, I mean we in general, just need the world to kind of fall back in place again so the 2021 recruiting cycle can start looking again the way that it's supposed to look. It's going to be a while before that's true, if ever, and we will see how that plays out there at that time. All right, so quick reminder, no show tomorrow in any form or fashion. That's a holiday for us, heading towards the Independence Day. Monday, pre-recorded for podcast, for radio, and for the first time ever on video. Hope you'll get a chance to check that out. We appreciate you being here as a part of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp every single day. I haven't mentioned this in the show yet. Let me give a quick shout out to Cole Wilcox. Right now, professional baseball players are finding it pretty difficult to get paid. Not a problem for Wilcox, though. As reported, DogNation.com broke the major league record for a signing bonus for a third-round pick. $3.3 million bonus for the with the San Diego Padres. So good stuff there for Cole Wilcox, who, you know, I think money is what caused him to slip as far down to the draft as he did, but ultimately San Diego steps up and pays him. So good for him. As I said before, it ain't easy for baseball players to get paid these days. Wilcox certainly coming through that way. Y'all have a great 4th of July. Here's some fireworks to send you towards that holiday weekend. Gator Hater Updater, 1,342 days. We think that number's going to keep climbing. We'll see you on Monday, everybody.